You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia he mari e, tēnā koutou katoa, ko mea toko ingoa.
Ko Sophia toko ingoa, no mai haere mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei wiki. If I can, coming up on the show today, Maya, what have you got today?
I had a kōrero with artist Angela Pan about her current exhibition, Spoiled Objects, on Now at Grace. Soph, what have you got?
I had a kōrero with Angela Tiatia, another Angela, about her work opening at Gus Fisher Gallery tonight as part of an exhibition with Yuki Kihara called Tala o Le Tau. I also caught up with archivist and curator at Te Tuhi, Peter Dirksen, about 50 years on, an exhibition uncovering 5 decades of Te Tuhi's archival material and stories.
He aha o whakaro, we would love to hear your thoughts on these pieces, so toku patuhi mai, you can text us on 5359 rima toru iwa rima wai mai rane, or give us a call in the studio on 309-3879.
Also after the show, kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kōrero anō, hei pakihere rokiroki maronga i te paitokutoku o irirangi poho, me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com. You can catch all of these chats and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Various Artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
Tala o Le Tau is an exhibition showing new and significant work by Angela Tiatia and Yuki Kihara opening tonight at Gus Fisher Gallery. The exhibition title, Tala o Le Tau, meaning Stories from the Weather in Samoan, borrows its name from the poetic translation of weather forecast used by Samoan weather services. Collectively, the works explore themes of the climate crisis in the Pacific, engaging with indigenous knowledge systems, femininity, and matrilineal histories to navigate into an uncertain future. Kihara's work is a collaborative piece made with women from the Moata'a Oaluma community, a group of skilled weavers and embroiderers based in the central north coast of Upolu Island, Samoa. Together, they have created 5 vibrantly coloured mats, reflecting a community, collective and indigenous approach to issues of climate change. The exhibition is also showing a moving image work of Tiatia's The Dark Current, which is a 3-part video acknowledging the past, present and future through a Samoan lens, exploring the intersections between colonialism, femininity and our relationship with the virtual and physical realm. I had a kōrero with Angela Tiatia about her work in Tala o Le Tau and her practice as a whole.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. So speaking to my practice as a whole, I think to speak really simply about it is that I love to explore power relationships and how the disparity in power impacts our Pacifica communities or Pacific identities. And then a key interest that sits within that is the impact of climate change in the Pacific.
So very suiting to this current exhibition, Tala o Le Tau, Stories from the Weather, which is bringing together work of your own paired with that of Yuki Kihara and the woman from the Moata'a Oaluma community in Samoa, exploring themes of the impact of the climate crisis on the Pacific, Indigenous knowledge systems and matrilineal histories. How did this exhibition kind of come about? Was it a product of a conversation between yourself and Yuki, or put together by Lisa Beauchamp as the curator?
It was put together by Lisa. I was really pleasantly surprised to be paired with Yuki because I love Yuki. I love her practice and I admire her so much for what she's done for the community and for us as artists who have come from underneath her, and I really look up to her.
And I wanted to speak about your work specifically in the show. We've got a moving image work titled The Dark Current. How have you presented the intersection of colonialism, femininity, and the relationship between us and the virtual and physical realm in this work?
That is such a layered question. Such a complex and layered question. Thank you for asking me that. I think colonialism, well, we're in the era of neocolonialism now. So for me, what used to be colonialism that arrived on our shores on ships is now replaced by multinational large conglomerate entities or businesses such as Google or Facebook or Amazon. These will rely on our attention and our spending and the harvesting of data. And so there's so much impact of that on us as Pacifica community as well as individuals. And so there's still a lot of conversation and exploring in that area that can be done when it relates to our communities. So there's lots of imagery that speaks to these relationships that are present in my work, but I don't want to make these themes really evident. I want it to be sitting within the image in a really quiet way, so that if you're aware of my work and aware of my practice, that you can look out for these elements, but I'm not highlighting them in a very direct way. So, for example, one of the opening scenes in The Dark Current, there is a young female woman and she's lying on this pink carpet, and then all of a sudden the camera turns and it starts going up above her body, but then the carpet and the floor that she's lying on, it drops, and then all of a sudden this wash of water comes over the carpet and it starts to surround her, and then the camera keeps pulling up and then we see her in a vast body of water. And so for me, that water that's hitting her body is colonialism. So it's like the symbolics of that that I can explore within an image, but it's not that evident. And it can also speak to climate change as well, because it is water. So there's lots of layers and interpretations within a single image. And then if we go to the third part of The Dark Current, it's a world that is made in Blender, this gaming software, and it's almost like a dystopia that I've made. And so this speaks to the blurring of the physical and the virtual world. And so those are the ways that I can talk to these interconnections. And there's water flowing all throughout the whole work. And so once again, that to me stands for neocolonialism as well as climate change.
Is there quite a personal relationship between yourself and the way you've executed the work then?
Always. There's always a personal relationship between myself and the works that I make, because the ideas and the images are coming from me. And so, you know, that very first image that I spoke about with the woman on the pink carpet, that is a representation of my mom and her journey from Pacific to Aotearoa. Mm. And my mom, although I represent her in this young woman, she also represents all the aunties and all the older females in the Pacifica community that were part of that great migration wave of the 1960s and 70s. So it's paying homage to them. And then I have such deep personal relationships to my aunties and to my elders in my community that it's really impossible to disconnect the two. So it's just so deeply personal. And Dark Current is like a couple of years old now. And when I used to first start talking about it, I'd be so tearful because of that deep connection. And so now I'm a bit better with time passing. Yeah.
Oh, that's so gorgeous. And yeah, I wanted to talk about a little bit more about your process. The film spans across 3 years and was made in 5 different countries. Can you walk us through a little bit more about the process for creating The Dark Current?
So The Dark Current was commissioned by the Ian Potter Cultural Trust that is here in Australia, and you apply for it. So it's very competitive, and it's part of a 10-year project where every 2 years they'll award $100,000 to an artist or an artist collective to create moving image. So it's very moving image specific. And the year that I applied was the very last year that it was on offer. So I was really pleasantly surprised and really honoured to be the recipient of the last award. You had to submit an idea of a project that you wanted to work on. And so I submitted The Dark Current. And The Dark Current comes in three parts. There is a beginning, a middle, and an end, which can also be read as the past, present, and future. And so the images in The Dark Current were images and ideas that had been swimming around for maybe about a year before I applied. And there's a work that I had made in 2021 to 2022 called The Pearl. And so The Dark Current is a follow-on from that, like a number two. Mm. So once I was awarded, it was a matter of putting the process in place to start making the work. And so it required research. I went to Aotearoa to interview my mother in depth, and there are some really beautiful stories that came out. And I traveled to French Polynesia and Niue and Samoa to gather research as well as gather imagery. And so in the middle part of The Dark Current, there is particular scenery that is of Tapu Tupu Atia, which is a really sacred site pre-colonialism for us Pacifica people. And so there's beautiful drone shots there. And then, so there was a lot of gathering in that 3 years. So there's this gathering of imagery and research. And then the final part of linking these all up was the creation of the in-studio shots that you see in The Dark Current, so the woman in the pink dress and on the pink carpet. And that was a really huge process in problem solving, because I really wanted to give the audience the sense that she was in a deep body of water, but then the practicalities of how to create that in a studio. So I worked with an art director who helped me create that shot. So we built a pool in a studio, we blacked it all out. We had a mechanism with this platform of pink carpet, and then we were able to drop it down in the pool. And then on the day of filming, there's a lot of choreography that happened between the camera and the platform and the beautiful female performer. We had Kasaria Jesus. And so it's a massive 3 years of problem solving and ticking boxes to make sure that you have everything in place for the time when you do need to edit everything. And then after the editing, then it gets sent away to Corinne Ileto, who is our composer, and then it gets sent to colouring. So it's this massive, long process.
Totally. And just to kind of conclude our korero, how does your work and Yuki's collaborative work complement each other in the space to communicate the ideas of the exhibition? Or I guess, how does having these works paired together strengthen the exhibition, do you think?
I think it creates a stronger conversation when we're talking about the impact of climate change in the Pacific. And if there's more of us talking about the impact of that, then hopefully it will speak louder. So we're stronger in a group than as individuals. And so I just hope that more of us speak to it, just so that it's amplified more, because it's such a issue. It's such a problem. And I think it's going to get away on us if we don't try as a group to do something about it.
That was artist Angela Tiatia speaking to me about her work, The Dark Current, which is showing alongside work by Yuki Kihara in an exhibition at Gus Fisher Gallery, Tala Ole Tau, opening tonight. The opening event is from 5:30 till 7:30 p.m. tonight at Gus Fisher Gallery, and there is also an artist talk between Yuki and Angela at the gallery tomorrow at 2 p.m, which is free to head along to as well.
What's it all for?
Various artists.
Right, we'll be right back after this short break. This is Molly Payton.
I'm trying for honey.
see the Lupin flowers way up past the border. We blew through Thunder Bay. The pine trees are narrow, a billion broken arrows. The ravens and the crows, robins and the sparrows, all across Ontario. Static on the stereo and swimming in the lake. Old Woman Bay, traveling with some stuff I left when I was a kid. Mr. Bear in the wooden box I hid. Full of broken gadgets that mean nothing now. The only thing I'll keep are the letters and the photographs. In 2 days it's my birthday and I'll be 33. That doesn't really matter next to eternity. But I like a double number and I like an odd one too. And everything I see from now on will be something new. Spirals don't get saggy, don't get gray, but the soft and lovely silvers are now falling on my shoulder. My mother and my grandma, my great grandmother too, mingle like the river, sweet and like the dew, and as silver as the rainbow scales that shimmer purple blue. How can beauty that is living be anything but true? So let gravity be my sculptor, let the wind do my hair, let me dance in front of people without a care. Let me be naked alone with nobody there, with mismatched socks and shoes and stuff stuffed in my underwear.
Good art.
Spoiled Object is artist Angela Pan's current exhibition on Now at Grace. Angela engages within a multi-medium practice, drawing from personal experience to navigate ideas of epistemological slippages, femininity, and an investigation into our perception of reality. Spoiled Object brings together elements of sculpture, video, and sound, inviting us into a site of mystical encounter in which objects slip into entities surrounded by sounds of orchestral breaths. I had a chat with Angela about the show. Here it is now. Could you start off by talking to me a little bit about your practice as a whole, some of your key drivers and themes, the kind of undercurrents that are present within your practice that both ground and propel it forward?
Some of my key drivers are from my personal experiences. So I look a lot into my own desires, curiosities, and intuition, and I ask questions like why we like the things we like, why we see the things we see, and why I am who I am, and how our reality is built a certain way. Then I kind of perform breakdowns and blurring them and transforming them about like how we understand things in our reality. So I tend to use the word epistemological slippage for that. So a lot of it is about our perception of our reality and ourselves. I personally focus on things like identity, femininity, emptiness, and some of the technological works also play with like virtual reality, fantasy and reality, or like nature, nurture, nature, technology. But the list can go on. I like to like see it as more so building personal mythology. So I'm also finding ways to make sense in my own world, but like transforming them into like new senses of agency and autonomy. So what I could make meaning instead. My practice seems to be grounded by like narratives and ideas that mostly contain paradoxes and nuances. So sometimes it's lively potential that is like forgotten or made invisible, and some other times it's because many of us are hypocrites and we don't want to see things. So like, for example, something like technology could both be celebrated yet feared. It could be like both symbolizing the future, it's like potential progression, but it could be scary if this potential disrupts society, like AI could replace jobs. It is like really lively with virtual promises until like it becomes a ghost of the past as soon as it becomes like an object or it becomes dead. So like these kind of multifaceted complexities, they kind of form a, like a network, and then like these are all like potentials and excesses and layers that I like to put them just under the broader theme that I mentioned earlier about like emptiness, how emptiness could mean like a lack or like nothingness, but also in like other perspectives, like Buddhism could mean like impermanence, flux, potential. It's like a placeholder object waiting to aggregate. So yeah, it's more so about perspective before we begin transforming.
Your current show, Spoiled Objects, on at Grace presents an installation of these tactile fur and satin veiled objects that seem to push up against their innate identity as object and into a place of entity. And this is enhanced through their added features of sound and video. Could you walk me through how this particular series of work came into fruition? Was there anything specific that you were really interested in navigating coming into this project? And if so, did you ever stray from that? Like, did you allow yourself a kind of breathing room to occur during the creative process?
The show actually started off from a singular work, which is untitled. Mm. It was made in 2022, and it was initially like designed to be just a video work and sound work, like it was just a projection. And however, like due to limitations of the place I was meant to display it in, it didn't work out, and then I had to find another way. The space didn't allow, the site could not take a projection properly. And then so I had to find alternative ways, like, well, I have to use a display and it has to be able to play sound. It can't be too revealing, and it has to be kind of mysterious, because that was what the video was trying to do itself. So it was more so finding a display that was speaking the same language as the video. And then I realized that technology nowadays is too familiar. So it's not magical at all. So I was really like, oh, so where can I find something a bit more magical? So I was looking for things we were like less familiar with. So that brings up technologies. And as I like kind of began obscuring and mystifying the work, because I had to do an extra layer, like I couldn't just show the video in the technology, like it was, if you see your phone, it's still a phone, so I had to kind of further conceal it, further abstract it in a certain way, which comes from the TikTok side of the work. And then I realized that by adding on more and more of these layers, it became more and more like lively. It kind of gained its own little personality as an entity. And then me and Emil from Grace, we brought up the kind of unexpected combination of how these two mediums brought up the idea of objecthood of moving image. So we were asking questions like, could a moving image also be an object? And what it means, because not only is it sculptural, it's also time-based. So the moving image in the exhibition kind of sets up a tone of the moving image is like both a subject and an object that is wanting to be desired. And it's kind of also developing this from a singular entity or object into a series makes it more like a worldview, and it's more immersive as well. So when you mentioned like breathing room, it's funny because the whole project is full of breathing room.
Oh wow. Yeah,
there's more breathing room than what I could expect, really. The way that like kind of the camera talks to the subject is unexpectable. Like it's kind of like performance. I have a series of instructions and guidelines I kind of set myself when I shoot. And then the abstraction is also unexpectable. It's a lot of testing, trials, fails. And then the only thing I really can expect is, or plan, is how I'm going to put the sculpture together after reflecting on all these unexpectable changes.
Yeah, I feel like that key thing, like allowing this breathing room, and then you've got to try to navigate this. And often I feel like that's where the beauty, or it arises, like these things that you didn't even know was going to like occur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the most unexpected thing came right after everything was made. Like the idea of the inevitability of death. Like there is, it's time-based and it's old. We are looking at a lifespan, like a living being. So we have to think about collectors as well. Like this will become a question. And as it is time-based, like we could think it really could die. But in this context, it's part of the work, like that the work shouldn't stop there after it dies. So like a pet that has passed, death certification is issued after death for the collector and the work will kind of continue in a different context.
As you've talked about, these works navigate your video practice in a really interesting way by pairing them with these luxuriously veiled objects, which add a sense of mystery and complexity both to the video work as well as the objects themselves. You briefly touched on this, but did this installation decision and pairing these two quite different kinds of medium affect or like alter how you previously approach video making? Did it shift your modes of making with video?
I know my previous video work, whether or not it's with the series, is predominantly depicts subject matters through projection or like a screen as a means. This time the medium itself is also part of the subject discussion. So like it made me consider alternative ways of presenting a digital work that feels tangible as an artwork, even in a commercial setting. So like the treatment of the technology with these fabricated embellishments develops a type of context that's like fashion. Like it's protection, it's concealment, it's performance of an identity, but it makes something that's not sculptural and embodied. So like why wouldn't moving image want to be loved like other traditional medium? So it really flips the question back to the medium itself and the value.
And I'm really interested in this idea of each object having their own orchestral soundscape. They kind of act like these pulses in a kind of like mystical language that is occurring both between the objects themselves and then between the object and the viewer. Could you talk a little bit about this element of sound and how it aids the show into this meditative site of encounter?
The video works themselves kind of already, like they reward anticipation. So the longer you spend the time with the other, which is the work, the more you could possibly get out of each individual work. But you do have to scrutinize, and then the work like rejects the full gaze. So the sound kind of plays hand in hand with the video. Like it echoes and then it kind of dances in and out of movement where like pieces of like abstraction and figuration come in and out. So sometimes also the technology, since it's older technology, it degrades the sound in a certain way that creates artifacts. So like it, in moments you might hear that like orchestral like little chirp, and in the next moment you might hear a glitch. And then like with these multiple works all together, it kind of also considers that people come in at different times. The encounters will never be the same, and that's kind of mystical in a way. One of my acquaintances, when they saw the show, they called the sound kind of like a chirp from the abyss. They were all kind of each calling out. They wanted to be seen, but the voices kind of had something more sinister or something more behind it. So it was playing like a little bit of a push and pull, and that push and pull kind of makes you want to guess or see more, and thus you're kind of like waiting or meditating for the next encounter within the video and the sounds work itself. It's kind of meditative because the context is generative. It doesn't really tell you the answer, but it invites more so like a prolonged engagement and contemplation of the place.
And what do you wish for audiences to gain from these encounters that are taking place within the show? Are there any questions or feelings that you hope audiences will bump up against?
I think to experience the complexity, the kind of conceptual access to the fullest, people don't need to walk away with answers, but I like to give room for people to productively speculate. That's part of the meditative aspect. Though, like, some questions I think I hope people might ask would be kind of like what spoilt would mean. So, which kind of leads to a series of social, cultural, aesthetic, and more assumptions about like value, perfection, failure. And then they might feel seduced or through these like beautifully cute, pristine, like soft objects. It's kind of nostalgic also when they realize technology and its pixels, but it also like, I hope they feel rejected of full ownership, because it kind of does reject that full gaze and full ownership. And I want them to walk away with their boundaries blurred and disturbed. So maybe it might not be disturbing because they do present themselves as if they're like toys, but it's more so like an unfolding and enlightening experience.
That was Angela Pan talking to me about her current show On at Grace, which is on now until the 28th of June.
Yes, darling, but is it art?
Sweet, now we've got some Red Fountain for you to listen to. Enjoy.
Tap your boots together and repeat three times. There's no place like home.
Home? I don't want to go home. I want to go to Hallertau Beer Garden.
Oh, I could go for a pint, actually.
There's no place like Hallertau Beer Gardens, with cold beers, warm fires, and the best jalapeno poppers in Auckland, as voted by Iconic Eats. Plus, get those poppers at reduced pricing during happy hour every weekday from 4 till 6 p.m. Hallertau Beer Gardens in Riverhead and Clevedon. Pop in for a pint or a meal today.
Challenge your senses in complete darkness with Darkfield, Seance and Flight. In Aotea Square now. Step inside two custom-built shipping containers and be transported as a strange new world unfolds around you with 360-degree audio and sensory effects that will leave you questioning reality. Darkfield, Seance and Flight. On until June 15 in Aotea Square. For tickets and more info, head to aucklandlive.co.nz.
Oh, my favourite jazz solo of all time. You know that one that's like...
Nah, I feel like they definitely improvise like...
You guys still talking about jazz?
Yeah, just trying to work it out, man.
Do you know Grover?
Washington, Limelight, great album.
Grover from the Muppets.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess so.
Does he like jazz?
All kinds of people love jazz. The 95BFM Jazz Show, Sundays at 12 with Blind Mango Chutney, Def Jim, Miss Dom, Francis Chan, or Dr. Mark Baines.
The 95BFM Jazz Show, 12 till 2 p.m. Sundays, thanks to San Ray.
Oh, good day, Frank.
Yeah, it's high tide now as well, so
yeah. What is it? Was this 3 foot, is it?
Yeah, at least. So yeah.
Is it onshore? Onshore's a good one, eh?
Yeah,
cool, yeah.
Oh, here comes a good one.
You get it.
No, it's okay. You go for it.
No, I insist.
Okay. Oh, damn, I missed it.
No, that was close, though. You did really well.
Thank you. Actually, I might head in. My board doesn't feel properly waxed.
Yeah, I think I'll join you. It's getting a bit messy out here now, anyway.
Yeah, so we just got to get a flat white.
The 95BFM Surf Report. All the surf, all the time. Weekdays on Breakfast and Drive. Thanks to Pro Gear Photographic.
Only positive critiques. Honest.
Various artists.
50 Years On is an exhibition at Te Tuhi uncovering 5 decades of Te Tuhi's archival material and stories. Te Tuhi's history began in 1969 when a small group of forward-thinking creative women formed the Pakuranga Art Society, initiated by Iris Fisher and Nanette Cameron. Since, the gallery has held over 700 exhibitions featuring local, international and nationally acclaimed artists and practitioners. Starting from the Pakuranga Arts Centre and the Fisher Gallery through to Te Tuhi today, the exhibition is a celebration of the gallery, people and stories over the years. I had a kōrero with archivist and curator of the show, Peter Dirksen, about the history of Te Tuhi and celebrating 50 years on. So Te Tuhi's history traces back to 1969, and in light of this current exhibition 50 years on, do you want to start our kōrero by walking us through a little bit how Te Tuhi came about? What is Te Tuhi's origin story?
Sure. So Te Tuhi started with the Pakuranga Art Society, which, like you said, originated in 1969. This was a group of forward-thinking women initiated by Iris Fisher and Annette Cameron, and they worked to fill this creative gap in Pakuranga's art community, right? So they opened the nation's first purpose-built community art centre in 1975 after several years of fundraising, which was called the Pakuranga Art Centre, not long after renamed the Pakuranga Community and Cultural Centre. But it was very clear that from the beginning that they needed a distinct exhibition space because it was mostly for kind of community arts groups and classes and tutorials and that sort of thing. So within that first year, that distinct need had already emerged. Of course, there was lots of public debate at that time about the value of the arts. They sort of generally, the general public sort of saw it as a very elitist institution. And so there was probably about 7 years of delays of public debating before they secured funding to then build the Fisher Gallery, which opened in 1984. So then Te Tuhi's history sort of really begins from 1984 onwards of this 50 years of exhibition making. Now to where we are now, which is a contemporary art space that supports the local and national arts community.
As you say, the foundations for Te Tuhi were established in the late 1960s by a small group of forward-thinking creative women. And the gallery started out, as you say, as being a very community-based and involved space. How has Te Tuhi's ethos remained the same and changed over the years?
I would say that the Tuhi still is very much community oriented and locally engaged as well. So we're still staying true to those original roots, but now the scope is definitely more national and international. We're inviting a broader community of arts workers and artists into the space and collaborating in much sort of broader ways across the nation.
Mm, totally. And talking about this exhibition that you've curated 50 years on, can you talk us through the scope of the exhibition and what it covers?
Sure. So it sort of starts in that 1975 era, in an art society. Of course, because at that point it wasn't a super well-established gallery, there wasn't heaps of material to go with, but we've got some lovely old photos, newspaper clippings, some old documents, that sort of thing, which trace that origin story. But then it really takes off probably at around 1984, so it includes maybe 200 or so archival ephemera objects, so things like posters, documents, exhibition invitations. I've spent the last 6 or 7 years working at the Tuhi as an archivist, digitising 35mm film files as well. So I would say the majority of the content is this kind of rich tapestry of material around exhibitions, not so much artworks in themselves, but I think that's just as valuable and important a story.
You kind of touched on it there, but I'd love to know a little bit more about the process of actually collecting and collating the archive for this exhibition. How did you go about doing that?
Yes, well, the archive has kind of already been established, but it was kind of piecemeal collected over the years. Of course, as an arts worker currently, it's pretty easy to just sort of like put stuff to the side after you've finished an exhibition and move on to the next one. Exhibitions themselves are like super ephemeral, right? Kind of these temporary events, but the archive exists as this record of all the awesome activity that went on. So for me, it was a process of basically passing through thousands and thousands of documents that have been collected and accumulated over the years and pulling out material that I thought was particularly representative of the era or just beautiful and interesting in its own right.
And with this kind of collection, does it speak to any of the possible challenges that Te Tuhi has faced over the years and how those challenges have made it what it is today?
Yeah, I would say it's not a super critical exhibition in the sense that I view it more as like a celebration. Of course, there are plenty of challenges, always a challenge of funding and financing the arts and a challenge of the scope as well. So you can definitely see that reflected in around 2001, where the scope suddenly becomes a lot more international and sort of falls in line with this like broader contemporary art practice. But for me, it was very much about highlighting these communities and the people around the arts. So there's kind of a rough chronological timeline of people with artworks, right? Because normally I feel like we usually see pictures of just artworks kind of still in their own space but without the people engaging, whereas this is definitely more like a feature on the people around it. So there's like photos of openings, photos of artists setting up installations, fabulous pictures of people in the 80s and 90s fashions and, yeah, that sort of thing. I find just as important part of the story.
Totally. And I guess it's all coming down to celebrating the community of the space over the years.
That's exactly right. Because, you know, at the end of the day, art are for the community and they are for the people. So to actually be able to highlight that has been a real privilege for me.
100%. And how did you guys celebrate? I know that there was a cake designed by Fiona Partington, which was a recreation of the cake for the Fisher Gallery's 10th anniversary in 1994, which I thought was a really special edition. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. So actually, the whole exhibition is named sort of as in honour of that show, which was called 10 Years On. And Fiona Partington at the time, she's had a long history with the gallery, has exhibited several times throughout its exhibition history. And yeah, she designed this beautiful cake, multi-tiered, elaborately decorated cake, which then we recreated for our founders' sort of community celebration brunch, which brought together all the important people throughout the Tuhi's history, And yeah, it was just a big party pretty much. It was wonderful.
Beautiful. Oh, well, it's been so great chatting with you, Peter. Did you have anything else you wanted to add before we end our kōrero today?
I just wanted to encourage people to go out there and visit, because I know it's a bit out of the way out in East Auckland and can always be a bit of a trek, but it's wonderful. And beyond my show, there's also some fabulous shows on at the moment, so please come and have a look.
That was archivist and curator of 50 Years On, Peter Dirksen, speaking to me about the history of Te Tihi and the exhibition. 50 Years On is on at Te Tihi until the 21st of December.
Hi, I'm Veronica Huber. I'm an artist and you're listening to BFM.
We'll be right back to give you your arts guide. You're on BFM.
Behind the sun and cast my weight. All I need's peace this mind, and I can celebrate. All I know is something to give. All I know is something to do. All I know is something to live.
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings in that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tāmaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, the opening event for Tala o Le Tau is tonight at Gus Fisher Gallery from 5:30 till 7:30pm.
Spoiled Objects, an exhibition by Angela Pan, is on at Grace until the 28th of June.
And 50 Years On is on at Te Tuhi until the 21st of December.
Dance Dance, an exhibition by Kate Vanderdrift, is on at Sanderson Gallery until 22nd of June.
Life and Forms is a survey exhibition of Pauline Kahurangi Yeburi's work on at Te Uru Waitakere Contemporary Gallery until the 27th of July.
Echo, a group exhibition featuring new and recent works by Kirsten Carlin, Veronica Herber, Rebecca Wallace and Emily Wolfe is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 14th of June.
Two new exhibitions at Room Gallery opened last week, Rituals by Tui Gypros and Heatwave by Raisa McLean. They are both on until the 5th of July.
There's a Bright Golden Haze in the Meadow by Dennis Watkins is on at Ivan Anthony Gallery until the 14th of June.
Francis Hodgkins Creating Space is on at Gow Langsford City Gallery until the 25th of June.
Intimation of an Endless Space, given in a small window of time, approximately 10 minutes, by Ethan Bourne and Lena Grum is on at Art Space Aotearoa is on until the 12th of July.
If you have something you want on the Art Guide, you can email us at art@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā.
That's all for us on various artists today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us.
Angela Tiatia.
Angela Pan.
Peter Dirksen. Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com.
Ka hoki mai mātou a te rā wiki. Next up is Land of the Good Groove with Nigel. My name is Sophia.
And I'm Maya.
And that was various artists.
We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.